Live from the Hive, it's the Studio Mila podcast. What do you think of that?
If you like it, that's fine.
Because it's not live.
No.
Or from the Hive.
And also the studio name is, the pronunciation is up for debate.
Right, it is more Mala, right?
Well, that's what I say.
Because, I mean, the podcast was primarily set up to be a discussion about how to pronounce the name of this studio, right?
I suppose we could at least come to an agreement once we're like 100 episodes in.
I thought I would already nail down, like, okay, I'm going to say Mala.
Yeah.
And then I did my introduction and I said Mila, didn't I?
Yeah.
So we're actually off to a really bad start. I've blown it already. My guest on the first episode of the Studio Mala podcast is Sean Cunningham.
Hello. How's it going? Thank you for having me.
Sean, what is your actual position?
I am, and it's very fun to say, the creative director and the co-founder, or a co-founder, not the co-founder, a co-founder of Studio Mala.
Before we get right into it, and don't worry, I am going to... Are we allowed curse?
Oh, I don't know. Let's say yes for now.
I'm going to flippin' grill you so hard. You're going to regret this entire endeavor so fast. But before we do that, I'm going to have to ask you for just a quick favor, okay?
Yeah.
On the count of three, I'm going to ask you to say a word, any word, and I'm not going to give you a lot of time to think about it. So, one, two, three.
Book.
Okay, now I'm going to need you to come up with a completely different word, and on the count of three, one, two, three.
House.
Okay, and now finally, this won't go on too much longer, don't worry. I'm going to ask you to scat a little. Just make up any kind of little beep bop doo doo.
Okay. Skadoop boop boop a boop biddy boop boop scoop a boop beep a boop biddy pop.
That's perfect, thank you. Now I will take those three elements and use them as a sting for this podcast because we need musical stings.
Okay.
And we're going to hear a quick example of that sting now.
Book, book. Book, book. Book, book. House. Book, book. Book, book. House.
So, are we locking in, it is said, Studio Mala?
I'm locking in, yes. Because the thing is, I said Studio Ghibli for so long, and then everyone snarled at me and told me that it was Ghibli years later.
When, of course, it's Bibli.
When it's Skadoobly, yeah.
This is a very scat heavy sort of
This is what it's going to be for the rest of the episode. But like, we've also just kind of accepted that we're going to be talking to so many people that are just going to say it differently. Mm. So our policy of correcting people has been erased, basically. So whatever you... As long as it sounds like something with an M.
Do you think Miyazaki is so relaxed about people saying Ghibli wrong? Or should I say Bibli?
I wonder about that, actually.
I have a feeling Miyazaki pounds his desk and says, no, Bibli. It's Bibli.
You idiot. No, no, no.
What made you go for Mala?
Well, Mala was actually Steven's idea, who I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. He came to me with that name, and I said, yeah, I like honey, and I know Irish, so... That's grand.
So you mentioned that you're a co-founder. I'm going to guess that this Stephen you mentioned would be the other co-founder in that.
Yeah, one of three. There's also Jerry. But yes, Stephen was a guy I met just over 2 years ago now. Worked on a short film together as part of a thing he was running that was like an educational program where... director would like a kind of fairly newish director would direct a short film, and all of the crew would be kind of training for their specific roles as well. And that's, we made a short through that called Agony Ant, and Stephen was kind of acting as a producer on that, and the two of us just kind of got on so well. And he was already, so this is kind of his thing in the first place, is that he was already looking to set up a new studio, and he was basically keeping an eye out for someone that he'd like to work with in the creative end of things. And I wasn't really seeking to start a studio initially until he kind of passed the idea on to me.
Well, we've got our origin story.
Yeah, I was actually just really lucky that I bumped into someone who wanted to set up a studio.
How did the growth happen? Like getting in contact with people and getting them involved?
I was still only a few years out of college and working mostly online and working with people on Twitter and Discord and stuff like that. So there would have been a lot of chat with me and my peers about, like, I was still fresh in that stage of being like, oh, we're all going to set up a studio someday. So a lot of my peers who had been working in different studios around the country or were looking for work or between jobs and kind of wanted the same thing. And I mean, the big common thing there was like, isn't it shite that we don't make any anime in Ireland? So that's why it was kind of easy to get people on, because that was a big sell for a lot of people, you know. People wanted to work on that stuff, and there wasn't really anything like that happening.
A shared passion for...
Yeah, I mean, it was, that's kind of the kickoff thing. I mean, it's obviously a lot broader now. Mm. But for me, it was like, I liked working on anime-style stuff and kind of wacky comedy stuff too. But I usually had to do that for myself, or I'd have to like move out of the country if I wanted to work in a studio that was doing anything like that.
Mm.
So when it came to talking about what kind of stuff we were going to make, well, the short that I had made with Steven was already an anime inspired thing. It would have been kind of based off, you know, Studio Trigger and Gainax and things like that, and people reacted to it really well, and you know, people got in touch saying that like, can't believe this is made in Ireland, I'd love to make stuff like this. Because of course, one of the things, as much as I loved going to Ballyfermot, one of the common Irish college things is like, they'll see any anime in your sketchbook and go like, no, none of that rubbish.
You're going to draw mice and you're going to like it.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And so that, I think that was buried deep within a lot of people in Ireland, regardless where they were. So like, I want to draw bloody Goku though.
Would it be safe to say that you want to be the Studio Trigger of the Emerald Isle?
That would be cool. Yeah. what a sentence.
What would you like people to think they'll get when they see it's a Studio Mala thing?
Yeah.
They can do different things, but you kind of know what each studio is known for. What do you want Studio Mala to be known for?
That was a handy thing for us because we were fairly settled on that from the start, I think. Was that like, we wanted it to be just really fun, frame by frame stuff. I mean, it sounds a bit cringy to say against the grain, but like, you know, kind of wanted to just make stuff that we really enjoyed making and didn't want to get set into a format of stuff that was being made in Ireland already.
Mm.
We were looking at a lot of studios that we really loved as well. And so, you know, I've mentioned that already, Studio Trigger and Gainax and things like that. But also outside of Japan, places like the Line Studios in London. And just these little kind of small studios across the world that were usually very... Because the thing about like places like Trigger and stuff like that is that they're usually quite small and focused on a fairly niche team of people or whatever. So we wanted to make the kind of stuff that those places were making, and it just wasn't being made here. So yeah, frame by frame stuff, a lot of like action orientated stuff, kind of slightly irreverent comedy things. That's really what we enjoy. Lots of stuff that'll be video game inspired as well. Just kind of the stuff that we enjoyed making. Like a lot of the stuff we make is in my experience when I've worked in other studios, the kind of stuff we talk about wanting to make at lunch or whatever.
If the now somewhat infamous screening of Promare that happened in Dublin was anything to go by, it proves that there was a hunger for this kind of thing.
That's kind of what I wanted to prove as well, is that like, I remember like pitching stuff around, and yeah, a lot of the common feedback was just like, oh well, I don't know if there's much of a market for this in Ireland or whatever. And I knew there was amongst my peers or whatever, so it, and it seemed to be a generational thing as well. So like, I really wanted to prove that, and yeah, work with the studio was kind of an opportunity to do that, because I can kind of skip straight to being able to get things in front of people that would have taken me a lot longer as a freelancer. And yeah, sure enough, we discovered that yeah, there was a hunger for that kind of thing,
and it was everyone who was in that room that night.
Yeah, it was about 50 people.
I feel like that screening of Promare is going to end up being that gig that the Sex Pistols did that everyone claims to have been at.
Yeah.
Like, oh, just God, this infamous right. moment where it's like, oh no, everyone was there.
Yeah, Promare is a feature film by Studio Trigger. Yeah, they put out in Cineworld in Dublin for one night 2 years ago. And it was just the most, like, electric cinema screening ever. Everyone was just having a blast going to, like, the pub afterwards and just everyone just talking about it so excitedly. It was great.
Where did your passion for animation begin?
It's actually funny. It wasn't until partly into college, into animation college, honestly. I went into Ballyfermot. I mean, I liked drawing and stuff when I was in secondary school, but I kind of decided to get into animation slightly last minute coming up to the Leaving Cert because I just didn't know what I wanted to do in college. And yeah, the course in Ballyfermot seemed easy enough to get into, and I got accepted into it before I got my Leaving Cert results. So I was like, oh, grand. Not to discourage anyone from studying or whatever, but that's kind of how it worked out. So for my whole first kind of year or two of college, I was just kind of going along with it and enjoying it and, you know, working hard enough at it. But it wasn't until like the third year of college that any kind of inspiration for me to pursue anything specific kind of popped up. Like, it wasn't until then that we started making our own stuff and I kind of realized, all right, I can do this. Like, I was constantly in the first 2 years of college just like basically being waited told what exactly I have to do here. I wasn't fully grasping it or whatever, but still enjoying it. But yeah, there came a point where I went, all right, I kind of get it now, and I see how I could make something myself. And that's when I kind of started making my own short films. So it was weird. It was kind of a mix of being inspired by peers in college. And, you know, obviously in college as well, I was watching a lot more films because they encourage you to. And I think my tastes really developed there. It's funny, like, it's not really that kind of story that maybe a lot of people tell of having one movie or one scene of a show that went, that was the moment for me. That's when I knew. It just kind of slowly dawned on me. I was like, all right, this actually, yeah, I'll carry on.
When I saw those dogs eating that spaghetti... I knew that's what I want to do for the rest of my life.
I want to be a dog eating spaghetti.
I want to eat spaghetti for the rest of my
life. I thought you were going to say dogs eating pizza because of the All Dogs Go to Heaven pizza. Because I do think about that quite a lot.
we have similar stories. I also, near the end of school, had no idea what I wanted to do for college. I just liked to draw. So I thought, well, I can draw here. The way our stories differ, though, is you got better, and I think I just got worse. Like, started quite like, yeah, animation, absolutely, cool. Let's do it, and just like instantly really bad at it, and just every subsequent month feeling more and more, I'm never gonna be any good at this, and I kept talking. As well.
Oh, you were talking, yeah.
I think anyone who was there would tell you, Owen just kept talking. So what I'm saying really is I'm glad that now I know I was honing skills. Blabbermouth podcast host skills.
There you go. And it all converged.
I'm good at talking to animators. I'm not good at animating.
Yeah, but that's
what I'm saying is, I shouldn't have been in trouble.
You specific person
who's definitely listening. What is your no limits dream project?
I would make some sort of Ghibli film, but like,
sorry, it's a Bibli.
I was waiting for it. Make some sort of Ghibli film, but also remove the massive amounts of pressure.
So make a Ghibli film, but everyone who's making it has a good time making it?
Yeah, basically that. Yeah, no one's miserable. like I love Ghibli films so much, and but I also know that like I could probably never work on one, because I don't think I could work that hard. I don't think I could ever make anyone else. But I would love to make something that, I mean, anything that just strikes a chord that much, I would love to make, because like I'll just watch them over and over again. I love Spirited Away because it doesn't over explain itself as well, which is why I watch it over and over again, and it's just always so much fun. It plays out the same way a child would tell a story.
Mm.
I mean, it's the kind of thing that they kind of tell you not to do. I mean, there is, I guess, a quote-unquote hero's journey thing of, you know, she loses her parents and then has to go through a whole rigmarole. But, like, it kind of then just plays out as, like, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and or...
That's but then this what blew me away the last time I watched My Neighbor Totoro.
Yeah.
That I was just like, in a way, this is nothing. But yeah. It's kind of like, what's so beautiful. And the last time I watched My Neighbor Totoro, I felt like I had already seen it. And the first time I saw it, I was pretty much like, yeah, that was nice. But the last time I watched it, I was like, every minute I thought, I'm going to cry. Yeah. Because this is just so amazing and beautiful. And what really amazes me is the fact that that was right at the start of Ghibli.
Yeah.
That, to me, feels like a film that
you would have to earn
the right to make. Like, you know, the way they had to earn the right to make Wall-E?
Yeah.
And Wall-E isn't even pushing the boat out to an extreme. It's... Yeah. The fact that there's no talking for a while, that's kind of the thing,
yeah.
As brave as it gets. But they still had to earn, they had to be like, you know, we can guarantee you this is going to make $100 million. Don't panic.
Yeah.
Okay. But like, imagine sitting down and saying, we're going to make this and it's going to be a film.
There's no villain. Like,
well, what happens? But not much, really. The thought of telling a producer, but I promise you it'll just be lovely.
Yeah.
And that being enough for someone to say, okay, spend loads of money and time, and yeah, like, just like, it's going to be so hard to do, but do it.
Yeah, that's one of those films would be great, because those are the kind of films as well that, like, in the right scenario as well, everyone would just love working on stuff like that. I mean we've talked about the stuff like the Daikon Forest stuff, any of those things where it seems like just all the animators were throwing stuff out there,
mm-hmm,
just having fun with it. Like, I'd love to make any kind of, even if it was a semi-serious film that like just went bonkers towards the end. Like, I love that about Satoshi Kon films as well. I'd mm-hmm love to make something like Paprika. That would be absolutely incredible. Like, that whole final sequence of Paprika is just the best. Just any of those things where it's just stuff, and that kind of goes into like the way I like animating on a basic level as well, because that plays with that balance as well of going from extreme to kind of slow, with just how this film is structured. You know, like there'd be a bit of chat and a bit of figuring out, and then just an explosion of just the most wild dreamlike stuff. And then back again, you know. I love that kind of thing. So it would be something like that, I think.
And I've asked you a few questions about what you'd like Mala to be. More specifically, what would you like the Studio Mala podcast to be? What are we doing here, Sean? And what do you hope to... What exactly do you hope to achieve here?
One thing I'd like it to be, and you can take it or leave it, Owen. So we've got those projects called the Mala Minis, where we've been doing like little tiny bite-sized shorts. And the kind of thing with those is that like the artists who worked in those had complete control over those projects. And it was just a chance whenever like artists we were working with were working on longer form projects. It just gave them an opportunity to make something that they felt like making anyway, or were already working on and just needed the extra boost to get finished and across the line. And it just meant that the studio was representative of more people than just myself and the few of us when we started out. So I want that the podcast to be kind of similar in that you're going to be talking to all sorts of people in the studio. So, which is, but you know, animators, artists, character designers, compositors, producers, writers, musicians, just kind of every aspect of all the different projects. I think it would just be good to get some of that out there, give them a chance to have some of their insights on where they want to take the studio and stuff they want to do, and give people that are listening a bit more of an understanding of how things work.
Well, it sounds good to me.
Yeah, it sounds good. I think also it would be good eventually to have guests that share like common interests in the studio and in animation would be good. So
yeah, well, one thing I would definitely like to do is justify how much I spent on these oblique strategies cards.
Oh my god, I was going to talk about those. I've got mine right, like, ready beside me.
Do you want to explain what these cards are, or shall I?
No, I'll explain them because I love them so much, and I've only recently gotten into them. Oblique strategies are a thing that Brian Eno came up with, who, if you don't know, is a famous musician and artist who worked a lot with people like David Bowie, but especially around the time he was working with Bowie, he came up with these oblique strategy cards, which is just a deck of cards that they just have a load of nonsense on them, basically. it's cards that say different things that are intended to like inspire you with an idea if you're kind of at a bit of a wall, and it kind of bleeds into how people like David Bowie wrote their music, because like Bowie kind of famously used to chop up words out of newspapers and just jumble them together, and until he kind of hit the sentences that he liked the sound of, that's how he'd come up with lyrics. And that's something that my dad kind of introduced me to, and that's kind of how I liked writing stories for animation when I was starting out. So recently my dad got me the oblique strategy cards, and it was really embarrassing because I don't think he had ever told me they were called oblique strategy cards. So when I got them, like what was meant to be this really meaningful gift, I was like, oh, this looks kind of cool. What is this? And then when I realized it was the Brian Eno thing, I was like, oh, right, sorry. No, I'm really thankful for that. Thank you. but I've been using them loads. Anyway, that's what oblique strategy cards are.
And I've picked up a pack myself, and I was hoping to, every episode of the podcast, I will draw one oblique strategy card and ask my guest what it says to them.
Okay.
And I think some of them are going to result in people going, because that tends to be what they inspire in people.
I mean, the funniest thing about them is that it even explains in the book, like, the thing you read out might not be relevant at all, but that in itself is a route to a whatever new idea.
What an absolute scam. Okay, Sean, I'm going to give you the first oblique strategy card.
Okay.
What mistakes did you make last time?
Oh, man. I stayed up too late. There you go.
Well, I mean, that's an important thing to learn from.
I mean, it is. I mean, I've only recently gotten into... Yeah, in the past kind of year, really, I've only really started figuring out the routine that I actually like with getting up in the morning and not staying up late. Mm. So I was pretty bad at that before. And that had a fairly profound effect on my life, I think. So that was one of the big mistakes I was making last time, I think.
No, good.
So it is good.
You're ready to make an album now.
Do you want to know my routine, actually? Because I've said it to you before, but I think people will get something out of it, because I kept realizing that whenever I tried to get up at 7, it just wouldn't work. Like, I'd get up and just fall asleep somewhere else. Like, just go to a chair. Because people always say, like, you know, the act of getting up and looking at some light and stuff, that will get you going. But I would just go into a different room and sit down and sleep again.
Until 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, until it was time to have dinner. The other thing that I was consistently feeling bad about, apart from getting up early, was I wasn't reading enough, and I wasn't practicing the instrument I want to get good at enough, and I wasn't exercising enough. So I decided that, I mean, it makes it sound like a more miserable thing, but for some reason it really worked out for me. I combined all of those things into the one time period. So for me, on a work day, 7 to 9 p.m. is when I do all that stuff that I feel guilty about not doing later in the day. And it just means that later in the day I can just do absolutely nothing and I feel great about it. But yeah, it's become like the first thing I do, I get up at 7, I read for half an hour, then I exercise for half an hour, and then I practice piano for half an hour. And then if I have more time, I'll...
That's a good routine, because it's those things that are so easy to put on the back burner until later.
Yeah.
Then just don't happen.
It's been so good. Like, I've read some books this year. It's crazy. I know it sounds basic, but like, it's really hard to read a book, especially when you're someone who's easily distracted as me and wants to just play a video game for 5 hours.
But also, if you've got stuff that you need to get done, you can feel silly reading a book.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you shouldn't, but if that pressure is over you, you think like, well, I can't justify sitting here reading when there's still those things to do. So yeah. Like deciding that that is the time to get it done is a nice idea. And what is Studio Matter working on currently, or what can we expect in the future?
The big thing we really want to get going in general is our own IP stuff. And without being too specific, I eventually want to make, you know, some wacky anime stuff with mechs. So someday we're going to get one of those kinds of things going, and we're working on that kind of stuff. So we really want to get into the realm of like features and our own TV series and our own specials and things like that. So we're always doing a lot of work on that stuff. Apart from that, and that stuff's going to be really good, by the way, it's going to be great.
I don't doubt it for a sec. And neither should the listener.
Apart from that, we're also always working on just those kind of continuous community project things like Mala Minis. We're going to be doing more of those this year. So we're going to basically continue to do those. We're hoping to amp up the amount we do as well. And I'm sure you'll be talking to plenty of artists who've made Mala Minis, and they'll tell you more about those. We are also working on a couple of client productions for TV. Nothing that I can disclose much information about, but they are both projects that very much fit within the kind of stuff you'd expect from us. They're very fun, and they're all, you know, frame by frame animation. And the little teasery information I can give is that the feature project is going to be a horror.
Ooh.
Which will be fun.
It won't be fun. It'll be terrifying.
And we're working on our own IP stuff for TV things as well. There's some like adult animation stuff, and there's some kids stuff there too. So yeah, we're just having fun and coming up with stuff. And a lot of it, like, we'll be showing more of this year and in the coming weeks as well. I'm sure that's something we'll be able to include in the podcast every now and then, is any updates on things like that. But yeah, keep an eye out for all that stuff.
When it comes to Studio Mala, I think what you have achieved so far is amazing.
Ah, Jesus, thanks.
I'm very thankful for this opportunity to be a part of the Mala adventure as it grows like a big Akira blob.
Yeah, so that's an animation thing there, you've said.
Yeah, everyone listening is nodding like, ah.
Mm-hmm.
Akira, yes, 1988. Mm.
The iconic bike from Akira. IKEA, I nearly said that. The iconic bike from IKEA
is back in stock. Well, thank you very much, Sean, for giving me your time. I hope that you'll come on again.
Yeah.
Either joining me as I talk with someone else, or if I just talk to you again.
Yeah.
We're going to be mixing it up from here on, and I'm very excited to talk to the rest of the Mala crew. I want to say a thank you to the other people in the Mala crew, because in preparation for this podcast, there was a lot of support and encouragement and very valuable suggestions from everyone about what they wanted it to be. And I want to give a special thank you to the community and project coordinator, Niamh, for all of her help getting us set up and running on this show.
Yeah, Niamh is great.
And I'm really looking forward to more from Mala.
Mula? Mula. That's kind of good, actually.
That was the Studio Mala podcast, brought to you by The Bean.
Ha ha ha.